This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron Corn Herbicide from Syngenta, an upgrade for growers who don't settle for average. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Well, guys, today is the day. Today was always the goal to have harvest wrapped up, right? Now, I know it didn't work out for all of you, but hey, it's an early Thanksgiving this year, so let's shoot for next Thursday to get things wrapped up, okay? Because today we give thanks.
From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk, agriculture's national talk show since 1994. Here's your host, Chip Flory.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Good morning, and thank you for joining us again today. Welcome to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory, on a holiday edition of AgriTalk. And later in the show, we're going to hear from Andrew McCray. Andrew does a podcast called Farming the Countryside, and he's been able to collect some really unique stories from farmers and ranchers from across the country. These are farmers that are giving thanks every day because they're getting to do what they want to do, where they want to do it. And at the end of the show today, we're going to hear from John Phipps. It's been a while since John was on AgriTalk, and there's no better way of bringing John back into the show than by having him share some of his thoughts around Thanksgiving. But first, we're going to hear from a couple of the regular voices on AgriTalk, Tyne Morgan from U.S. Farm Report and Clinton Griffiths from Ag Day. Good morning, guys.
Oh,
happy Thanksgiving.
Good morning, Chip. I'm stuffed.
Already?
Yeah, well, you know, it's pumpkin pie season, which in my book makes it A-okay.
Right.
I've been
right.
wearing my stretchy pants since November since November 15th, and I don't plan to take them off till December 1st. I mean, I'm sorry, January 1st.
January 1st. I was going to say,
they're
in keep
now.
Those things handy.
They're in now, Chip. You know, everything from the 1980s, early 1990s is making a comeback, and I'm appreciative that the stretch pants, even dressy stretch pants, are making a comeback.
Maybe get some stripes.
Oh, I'm feeling pretty good about my mustache and sideburns then.
That's right.
Did you grow a mustache?
Well,
no shave November.
Oh,
no shave November.
Chip. Oh no!
Why don't we have a picture of that on Twitter? That's what I want to know. No, Tyne, are you going to get the stirrups on the bottom of those? Remember those? Remember the old stretchy pants?
They're all back.
Come
Everything.
On, with the stirrups?
Yes, and I'm thankful for that.
You're thankful.
I loved that. You know, I didn't live much of the 80s, but I loved them, and I really loved the 90s.
And you've always had the hair for the 80s.
I feel like I missed my decade.
More bangs.
So I'm hoping.
More bangs.
No, I'm hoping bangs come back too, man. I'm excited.
Bigger is better. Bigger
That's
is better.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know what I'm thankful for, Chip? Because, you know, AFBF's put out their survey, and the average cost to feed 10 people this year, $48.90.
$48.90.
The $48.90 to feed 10, less than $5 a person.
But the sad part is,
Thanksgiving meal.
Yeah, but,
isn't that crazy?
But the sad part is, what's attributing to that? Lower poultry prices, including lower turkey prices,
lowest in 10 years.
Lower milk prices, lower sweet potato prices. I mean, it's lower prices. It's great for a consumer, but, you know, your heart goes out to all those producers that are seeing those low prices, too.
Yeah. Yo, well, absolutely.
Yeah, their share of the food dollar only goes so far, right? We know that.
Yeah, and we've talked about this not only on AgriTalk, but on AgriTalk After the Bell several times. You look at some of the profit margins that the processors and the packers and everything are looking at. I'm not against them making money, guys. I'm thankful that they're making money. They need to make that money. I'd just like to see some of those, a little bit more of those margins make their way all the way down through the supply chain and make their way to the farm gate, you know?
Yeah, I think we all would. Yeah, I mean, at some point, you got to have people still feeding those packers and processors. And, you know, we got to support our farmers here. Otherwise, we're going to be importing all of our food. And, you know, that's not something I want.
Exactly.
You know, Chip, it's not just price this year that's been a challenge. We know it's also been Mother Nature. You mentioned it at the top of the show that some farmers are still harvesting. Not right now. They're thankful for some of the bushels that are in the field, but it's just been a nightmare to get them. Our heart goes out to a lot of those producers, not only in the Midwest facing that, but, you know, in the Southeast and the South and then the wildfires in the West. There's just so much that gets thrown your way when you rely on Mother Nature year in and year out. Mm-hmm. And this was no exception to that. Yeah.
Well, you got the drought that hit the Southern Plains.
Yeah. And then now too wet.
Now it's too wet.
And they can't get winter wheat planted, can't get the cotton crop harvested. I mean, talk about extremes. Year in and year out, we see that. But 2018 has definitely showed us that extremes are still there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no question about it. But here we are. We're still here.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're still firing away.
Yeah. And they'll be
And
here
I think
next
that's
year.
One of the things that we need to sit back and reflect on as we get to this time of the year is look at all the challenges that farmers faced in 2018. They hit them head on. They survived it. And we're moving on to 2019. I'm not saying that it was easy for anybody out there.
Resilience,
I'm not saying that.
Resilience reigns. You know, we don't grow when things are easy. We grow when we face challenges. And that is what we've seen this year. And so if you can reflect back on anything, it's, you know, you survived this and you're going to come out better for it.
Yep. And that's a lot of the theme behind this year's Harvest of Thanks, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
Clinton and I enjoy, this is one of our favorite shows to put together every year. We put a lot of thought into it, a lot of heart into it, you know, telling stories from the countryside. And so, you know, I went and visited Nome, Texas. There's no place like Nome, is there, saying, Chip? But they're right outside of Beaumont, Texas, even though they're not right on the coastline. They had Hurricane Harvey last year. Some of those producers still today have not received payments. Some of those people that live in the town have not received payments. Some of those residents threw in their hat and said, you know what, we're moving somewhere else. So the town will never be the same. The scars are still there. But I visited with the Nome mayor, who is also a farmer, and he just talks about, you know, yeah, it's been hard, but we're just thankful for all the help that we've had to rebuild. And that rebuilding's still going on today.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I put together, you know, some sound from folks in the Southeast as they dealt with two hurricanes, North Carolina, Georgia. You know, you look at the trees and the damage to, like, pecan groves. You talk you know, it's just heartbreaking. They're saying 5 years before they can even be back up and running. One guy, they were asking him, well, how long is it going to take you to clean up? And he said, you know, I can clean up a couple acres a day. You know, he's got 1,500 acres. You know, It takes a long time, and then you got to come back in and replant. And, you know, they had all of the nuts were on the ground, and so they've got to try to find all those. And, you know, the cotton farmers down there that were looking at some of the best profits.
Ever.
Yep. The best crop ever.
Best crop, best prices.
Yeah. I mean, one guy said, I was going to send my kids to college on this year's crop.
Yeah.
Now I'm starting over. Yeah. All the loans I paid off before, I'm starting over. And it's heartbreaking.
And Clinton, the damage to those tree crops that you were talking about, I'll admit, I've looked at almond production and pecan production and everything like that, but I haven't really gotten into it to try to understand it in the past. It's impossible to determine how much damage was done to these farms.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
It is absolutely impossible because of the time that it takes to establish those crops, those trees, so that they're actually producing something. And then just the total lost value out there, it's really difficult to
And it'll be generations to recover, just like Tyne was saying in Texas.
But it's a year that you face these challenges, and you're just reminded, be thankful for the little things in life.
Yeah.
And it helps, I think, all of us, and today's a day for all of us to step back, and, you know, we all face challenges every day. We all get stressed. We're all running around 90 to nothing day in and day out. Today's just a day to reflect and be thankful for the health, be thankful for the people we have in our lives, just be thankful for, you know, those little things that sometimes we all take for granted.
Yeah,
absolutely. We need to get to a break so that we can get to your stories here, guys, your Harvest of Thanks stories, but you're set up very well. It's the little things that make your life better, and it's the little things that I'm thankful for this year. A little thing called Marin Rose that made my family better.
That little baby. We get
that baby. Hey, we'll be right back with more AgriTalk. Thanks, Tyne. Thanks, Clinton.
No matter what you do, you're always raising the bar, trying to do better than ever. New DeLauro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you get the edge you're looking for. DeLauro has a broader spectrum of disease control and best-in-class dual mode of action residual. Plus, it improves plant health, so your top-performing hybrids and varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve your personal best yields. DeLauro from Bayer. Keep raising the bar. Always read and follow label instructions.
Current price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF LibertyLink system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgrow Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
It's time to get dirt rich with new Poncho Votivo 2.0 corn seed treatment. The increase in microbial activity in the soil helps get more nutrients to the plant, and you get an average 3.8 bushel per acre yield increase over the original Poncho Votivo, all with the trusted insect and nematode protection you're used to. So be dirt rich, because that's smart. Ask your seed dealer for the new Poncho Votivo 2.0 today. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Growers face enough worries today. SDS and nematodes shouldn't be among them. Alevo seed treatment from BASF is the only product that offers effective protection against both SDS and nematodes throughout the critical growing period. Growers get amazing early season protection for stronger profit potential at harvest. So worry about weather. Don't worry about SDS or nematodes with Alevo. To find out more about Alevo and how to protect your soybeans, talk to your seed dealer or your BASF rep. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
I'm joined by Steve Gomm, herbicide product lead for Syngenta. Steve, you know, let's face it, we had a lot of challenges with the weather this year in 2018, especially at planting when herbicide applications are so critical. As they are making decisions for 2019, is there anything they should consider that will help them when conditions are less than ideal?
Yeah, Chip, we hear it all the time, and I know you've heard it all the time in agriculture, but no two seasons are ever the same, and we're always up against Mother Nature. But specific to herbicide applications, it's really important in choosing a herbicide with application flexibility. And so let's take a look at Iowa, for example, this year. Generally speaking, the northern portion of the state was too wet, where rain delayed herbicide applications. The southern part of the state was too dry, and then the central portion was probably just about right. So if you were in the northern Iowa area and chose a herbicide that was a pre-emergent only or had a very limited post-emergent application window, you likely had to return it and exchange it for something with greater flexibility, which probably added stress to an already stressful situation. I know when growers are trying to get ready to plant, it's always stressful when you're watching the weather. But Acuron gives you the flexibility to apply from 28 days pre-plant up to 12-inch corn, which gives you a much wider window when Mother Nature throws a curveball, like wet weather, dry weather, whatever it may be. And so you can also apply it in a variety of ways, one pass at full labeled rate, and then two pass either as a split shop application with a portion of the rate pre, followed by the remaining portion of the rate post, or Acuron applied pre, followed by Halix GT and atrazine. And so the key point there is that whatever Mother Nature throws at farmers with weather, Acuron is going to give you much more flexibility for those types of conditions that can really change.
That is fantastic, because these guys, they need that flexibility at that time of the year. They're trying to get that seed in the ground. That's priority number one. But priority number two has got to be controlling those weeds right behind it. Thank you, Steve. That is Steve Gomm with Syngenta, sharing the importance of choosing a herbicide with application flexibility, because like he said, no two seasons are ever the same.
I'm Andrew McCray, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, farmer-focused podcast that's all about production agriculture. Farming the Countryside is available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts and is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody, and happy Thanksgiving. Andrew McCray is one of my favorite storytellers. He can tell a story well, but so can a lot of people. In my opinion, if you take the time to tell me a story, I want to be entertained, and every now and then I want to learn something. That's what makes Andrew a great storyteller, and he does a great job of telling the story of the Ron Rabu operation in this Farming the Countryside.
Some people may not know where you are located. You are in Wyoming in the very southeast corner, but tell me kind of how your family got there and how they got started in farming.
Yes, well, my great-great-grandmother came from Kearney, Nebraska in the late 1800s. and came to Cheyenne, Wyoming. And incidentally, my great-great-grandfather was a stonemason, and he helped build the Capitol building and the Union Pacific train depot here. When he passed away, it was always part of her dream to homestead some land, which she did in the early 1900s. The land that our place actually sits on is the oldest deeded ground in my family's name. And she had purchased a half a section on the north side of where we're at right now, way back in the early 1900s. And so that's really how I got my start here in agriculture and how I found my roots in Alvin, Wyoming. My dad was the hub that made the wheel turn, so to speak, in the operation. He was the one that primarily made all the business decisions and kept everyone lined out. And, you know, not to put down other family members or anything like that, but he was really kind of the brains that ran the outfit. And everyone else participated, obviously, in physical labor, as did he. You and I met way back in the early 90s when we ran for National FFA office together. After that time, I was on the National FFA Made for Excellence staff. And then shortly after that, was hired as Wyoming's executive director of their FFA foundation. And I was doing all the PR and fundraising of that organization. And I would come home, you know, periodically to help my dad. And this particular instance on November 4th in 1999, I was 26 years old, came home to help my dad in the operation and wean calves. And I turned to fill a vaccine gun and turned around, and he was on the ground. And the short story is I gave him CPR and he didn't make it. And he was a picture of a pure picture of health. He was 58 years old. My mom was 54. And I just remember kneeling over him. And it just seemed like a surreal moment that, you know, one of these things that you don't believe that you're actually living in that moment. And that was a turning point in my life. I was incredibly close to my dad, and he and I did everything together. He was my confidant. He was my mentor. He was my friend. And quite frankly, I couldn't imagine living life without him. And a similar circumstance happened shortly. It was the week before I went to Kansas City to run for national office when we met there. My best friend from high school was killed in an accident. And really, between he and my father, they were the real true friends that I had in my life. When this happened to my dad, I really didn't know if I could go on. And as you might imagine, it created quite a turmoil on the ranch. And interestingly enough, people's true character comes out when things like this happen. You know, I jokingly tell people when I go speak that if you want to know what a family farm and ranch is, just pick the relatives that hate you the most and go into business with them and live next door. And I say that kind of, you know, lightheartedly, of course, but it was difficult when I was growing up and watching the struggles that my dad had dealing with family members. And it became significantly worse when he was not there. And the division between the two sides of the family became extremely apparent. And it really became more divisive as time moved forward. And during that time, I just knew that something was going to have to happen. And after 4 years of thinking about it and trying to figure out different ways about how I could continue on in production agriculture without dealing with the fights, the arguments, the, you know, all the disagreements about, you know, my dad's cousins were in their 60s at the time, late 50s and 60s. And, you know, we just had different ideas of what we wanted to accomplish and how we wanted to accomplish it. I guess the long and short of it is that I kind of committed the ultimate sin in agriculture, and I broke up the family ranch. And it was a very difficult decision for me to do, but I'm a person that believes very firmly in the fact that we really do need to spend more time as people in life talking about not our goals and what we want to accomplish, but talking about our priorities. And our priorities are the things that are ultimately the most important to us. And that is that if everything goes away in this life, what are the things that are the most important to us that we would want to remain if everything else were to go? And, you know, I think that we're all, at the end of the day, we're all much more alike than we are different. And that probably for most of us revolves around faith. It revolves around family. it revolves around time for both. And so when I reflected on that and spent time determining those priorities in my life, I chose not to move forward the way that my dad did, fighting with family. And I really did believe that at the time when I left the family ranch, that we could still work together and that we could still function together. You know, the dilemma was that when you have a family operation, as anyone in production agriculture knows who is in business with distant relatives or even immediate family, everyone owns everything. So essentially, no one owns anything. And my goal was to say, okay, this is what I own. This is what you own. These are our resources that we can make work for ourselves. But in the process of that, how can we still work together and function together? But unfortunately, the other side of the family had different ideas. And I was more or less blackballed, kind of set out to do my own thing. We took a pretty big hit when we left the family operation because of the estate planning agreements and the buy-sell agreements that were set up. And so I lost a significant portion of what I owned by leaving. I could have retained that had I stayed, but I really believe that these priorities were what was more important. We set off to kind of venture out in agriculture on our own. We had done a little bit of farming when I was raised, but not anything modern and anything even significantly large by any stretch. And so I ended up with my grandparents' place where they had lived for 62 years. And the whole place was really had been neglected for 62 years. They had done the best that they had and at the time. And so we began this long journey of trying to fix this operation up and trying to figure out how do we make it now in production agriculture. When I started, I didn't have any cows. I didn't have any facilities for cattle. I had some pasture, but here in Wyoming, it takes a significant amount of pasture to pasture a cow. You know, we figure anywhere between 30 and 35 acres per AUM per year. And obviously that's different in the Midwest. I could wish it were different here, but it's not. And so you have to have a lot of acres here in the cattle business to make it work. As time evolved, we began to go backwards in our operation. We had old equipment. We had just a few acres of farmland, and we had the original section here where my grandparents lived, and really not the knowledge that I needed to really make this venture in farming work. And so at one point, as I was kind of trying to figure out how I was going to make things work, and this was about 4 years into being on my own, I finally decided, you know what, it's time to stop looking at this operation and this land and these things that we have in agriculture that we seem to be so attached to, that I decided, instead of looking at the emotional side of things and holding on to things for the sake of holding on to them, I really needed to look at this business and this operation as an actual business. That was something that I was not necessarily taught growing up. You know, we had a smaller operation and there were four families that lived off of that operation. By all means, there shouldn't have been only but one family living off of that operation. The business model that we always had was just don't spend anything and we'll make it. And for me, when I ventured out on my own and I began to look at my operation as a business, I was bound and determined to say saving money on expenses, while it's a good idea, isn't a good business model all unto itself. There has to be something more there. But we're very proud of the fact that we have taken this operation and really turned it into something that can take care of our family and can take care of our family well. I'm a believer that it's really important to not just work all the time, but to remember to live. And I think that we as human beings, and especially maybe here in America, we work hard. And I know that every person listening to this that has an ag operation knows that the hours never stop and that the stress never stops and that the workload is always there. Figure I'm relatively young at this point and I feel good. And gosh, I want to go enjoy some of those things that are priorities in my life and things that I want to experience, things that are on my bucket list.
I absolutely love it. It's time to start checking some items off of the bucket list. Thank you, Andrew. Hey, you can hear Andrew McCrae's Farming the Countryside podcast on the AgriTalk app. Just tell your kid to download the free AgriTalk app to your phone and make sure they show you how to find AgriTalk ATP and Farming the Countryside on the AgriTalk app. Up next, a Thanksgiving message from our friend John Phipps.
Current price.
price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgrow Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success, like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
ProFarmer editor Brian Grady and senior market analyst Jeff Wilson are celebrating Thanksgiving with their families today, and the markets are closed. So let's take a look at what the turkey market has done this year. In the first week of November, the average price on a whole fresh U.S. grade A 16 to 24 pound tom turkey was 112.42 cents per pound. That was down slightly from the previous week, but was off about 8.5 cents from the same time last year. And that below year ago price trend, that has been consistent throughout 2018. And while last year's price was below the 3-year average price, this year's turkey prices are also running below the 3-year average. I'm not saying turkey prices are hitting the parking lot like bags of wet cement, but I think Silver Sow Award winner Les Nessman would agree that U.S. turkey prices have traded low enough for a long enough period of time to force some changes in production. And with retailers offering deals ahead of Thanksgiving like buy a ham, get a turkey, it appears the traditional Thanksgiving turkey has been delegated as a loss leader for 2018. Turkey slaughter in 2018 is down from year ago, but just slightly. That's likely to keep turkey prices locked in a fairly narrow trading range and well below year ago levels into the end of the year and likely deep into 2019 as well. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I'm Chip Flory for Markets Now.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with ProFarmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous 1-month free trial. ProFarmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Prepare for the future of ag technology at Farm Journal Media's Ag Tech Expo, December 3rd through the 5th in Indianapolis. Whether you're a novice or a tech-savvy early adapter, Ag Tech is your go-to source for the latest in the industry. Customize your event experience and gain a competitive edge with more than 25 educational breakout sessions focused on precision ag, using data, machinery and iron, and sustainable technology. Grower and retailer registrations only $99. Sign up today at www.farmjournalagtechexpo.com.
You could win a Ford F-150 Raptor in the Ag Explorer Truck Sweepstakes. Enter at trucksweeps.com.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody, and happy Thanksgiving. We're going to have a conversation with Andy Lucas. Andy is the Information Director at Georgia Farm Bureau, and we talked with Andy, I don't know, it was 6 or 8 weeks ago on AgriTalk, and We talked with Andy as they were doing really what turned out to be the initial evaluation of the damage that was caused by Hurricane Michael down there in Southeast. That conversation with Andy, it kind of hung on to me, okay? It had an impact on me, and I wanted to get back with Andy now and check up on how farmers in Georgia and in the Southeast are recovering from those storms. Andy, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you this morning?
I am well. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Chip. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's good to hear from you. So, Andy, what's the status? I mean, as bad as things were down there, I'm kind of hesitant to ask what the status is, but knowing Georgia farmers, I got a feeling things are improved.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when we last spoke, you know, just a few days after the storm, I think our spirits were low, but you know, as producers across this great state of Georgia and also across the United States, you know, farmers, they put their boots back on and they go back to work and they make the most of whatever opportunities are out there. And that's what they've done. They finished up this harvest season. We're almost done with just about completely done with peanuts. We still have some cotton that we're still trying to gather. The yields are not, you know, nowhere near what we had hoped for going into harvest, but we're going to try to make the most and do what we can in this situation.
Right. Right. What about some of the livestock operations down there, Andy, because we talked a lot about the crops the last time that you were on, but we didn't talk a lot about the livestock operations. And it's something that those guys further north of you, they really suffered, but yet there had to be some exposure in Georgia as well.
Absolutely. You know, Georgia's known for peaches and pine trees and peanuts, but you know, the poultry industry, we had some poultry damage to some of the houses that we've got down there, and I think there was somewhere around 126 poultry houses that were destroyed, you know, which won't be a lot, but I think the process of rebuilding those poultry houses will probably take almost a year. And, you know, for us, you know, one of the byproducts of raising poultry is the litter, and that litter is used for fertilizer, and so those producers that had put pen and paper to this and figured out a way to use the poultry litter for fertilizer helped lower those costs. And so they're going to go a year without those opportunities in that. And so it's a storm. It had a long tail and it will continue to be. But, you know, we had cattle that was, grazing side the road. We had fences that were down. We were able to hopefully get all those cows back to those herds. And, I think everything kind of within a few days, we were back up and operating with our cattle operations down there as well.
Okay. All right. You know, and when we talked last, Andy, you were talking about the damage to the pine trees and the lumber industry there, and then throw in the California wildfires that have taken place, and all of a sudden the forestry portion of the farm bill took on a little bit more significance, it's interesting to see how they write that farm bill all the time, Andy, and they say, listen, we want to write it in such a way so that when a disaster happens, we don't have to have any special activity here in Congress to address those issues. But it feels like some special interest is needed this time around, doesn't it?
It is. You know, farm policies are wrote for that safety net of what if.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of the what ifs are, you know, smaller in scale. But when you have the hurricane that came through Georgia, southwest Georgia, Alabama, parts of Florida, and, you know, just kind of came all the way up here in Central, you know, those are a lot of counties that provide a lot of timber, and the timber industry, you know, certainly is going to be continued to be affected because it's so hard to salvage that. There's just not a lot of money per ton on those type salvageable products after a storm. So they're going to be wrestling with that sometime. And, you know, some of those policies that we have in Washington are good, but it's difficult in these type circumstances to address.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So, Andy, here's the deal. I'm taking a look at what you've got going on down there, and in typical farmer fashion, you're coming out of this hurricane season pointed towards the Georgia Farm Bureau Convention, and I see that you're planning a celebration for the convention.
Absolutely. You know, we're always You know, that's the thing about producers in Georgia. You know, we work hard. You know, it's spring, it's planting, it's moving to that harvest. But then there's also a time to reflect. And, you know, we're always developing policies that help our producers in the state. And, you know, it's just a great opportunity for farmers to come to the island and kind of reflect. And, you know, this year they're going to be probably having conversations that it's been a tough year. But, yeah. You know, as in farming, it's been tough for some times. You know, this storm is just one storm. But, you know, agriculture has been in a storm for several years now with low commodity prices. And certainly y'all can experience what you're seeing out in your neck of the woods just like we're experiencing here.
Yeah. Yeah, and Andy, it really does speak to the spirit of the American farmer with what you're doing down there when you come through a tough year like 2018 has been, but you decide that you're going to have a celebration when you get together at the Georgia Farm Bureau Convention.
Absolutely. We hope so. If nothing else, we can share in stories that helps lift our spirits.
Yes. Absolutely. What's next down there, Andy? What do you guys need next?
I think the assessment, you know, a lot of our producers are working with their loan officers. They're working with their people that they've got equipment leased with, you know, and some of those things are, you know, the math's just not going to add up. And so we hope that there's some type of a relief that comes from Washington. Our session, we're finalizing that, a special session that we can kind of help some of the producers here in the state. And then we also, you know, as an organization, we're trying to step up and do our part too. And so if someone is wanting to help producers here in the great state of Georgia, they can go on gfb.org and they can make a donation or contribution. If they're feeling thankful and blessed in their part of the world and they want to help our part of the world out, they can make one of those contributions, and we'd be grateful for that.
Excellent. Excellent. Andy, it was a pleasure to talk with you again. Thank you so much for the update. It's uplifting to have the conversation with you about, like I said, it's been a tough year down in the Southeast and along the Gulf Coast for a lot of producers down there. But just the simple fact that we keep doing what you're doing and making progress, it's good to look back at this story at this time of the year and just realize how much there is to be thankful for.
Absolutely. And thank you for what you've done to get our message out as well. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, Andy. Good stuff. Thanks, man. My gosh. I mean, good grief. In farming, we all deal with a lot of different issues that in all the different parts of the country. Think about what we went through in 2018. With the water in the northern production areas, the dry conditions in the southern plains, we can't forget we had range fires at the start of 2018 down in the southern plains again this year. So, but that Hurricane Michael, man, it changed lives in the Gulf States and the southeastern U.S. It changed a lot of lives, and they're obviously still dealing with those impacts. But you know what? I am not saying that the situation in Georgia and other states that took a punch from Hurricane Michael is much different than the other natural disasters that have happened over the years and around the country. In 2018 is the 10-year anniversary of a massive tornado that changed the lives of people in Parkersburg, Iowa. And I mean, it changed those lives forever. I know that for a fact. But if we look over at Parkersburg, which is just west of town here, and use that as an indicator of what has to happen, what will happen on a much larger scale in the southern U.S. after this year's storm season, I think we can all have a lot of confidence that, like Andy said, agriculture and the people involved in farming and ranching in that area will emerge stronger from having had to deal with that disaster. It doesn't make it any easier, But the farming community deals with it and moves forward. Not only does it move forward, but it celebrates the resiliency of farmers to rise up and overcome the obstacle that you all have to deal with when you're doing business and you're a business partner with Mother Nature. And I know there are challenges that you all face when it comes to the weather, but when I get on Twitter at the end of the day and I see some of the pictures y'all have posted throughout the day of working in the field all day long just to get to that picture of another beautiful sunset, it's pretty clear the relationship farmers have with the weather is one of the best examples of a love-hate relationship that has ever existed. And by the way, everybody that posts a picture of a sunset on Twitter claims it's the prettiest sunset in the country. We all know that can't be, that they all can't be the prettiest, right? Well, or can they? I guess it's all part of the perspective. We're going to lighten things up going into the end of the show. We've got my friend John Phipps up next on AgriTalk.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Prepare for the future of ag technology at Farm Journal Media's Ag Tech Expo, December 3rd through the 5th in Indianapolis. Whether you're a novice or a tech-savvy early adapter, Ag Tech is your go-to source for the latest in the industry. Customize your event experience and gain a competitive edge with more than 25 educational breakout sessions focused on precision ag, using data, machinery and iron, and sustainable technology. Grower and retailer registrations only $99. Sign up today at www.farmjournalagtechexpo.com.
Don't miss your chance to win one of two brand new John Deere Gators during the Valent Fully Loaded Sweepstakes. The 2019 John Deere Gator is the ultimate utility vehicle for getting things done. Fast, powerful, and capable of handling payloads up to 1,500 pounds, the John Deere Gator works just as hard as you do. Enter for a chance to win now at ValentFullyLoaded.com. That's ValentFullyLoaded.com. No purchase necessary to enter or win. Ends March 10, 2019. See official rules for details at ValentFullyLoaded.com.
Spray nozzles are some of the smallest and most overlooked pieces of equipment on a sprayer, but they can have the biggest impact on accuracy, efficiency, and drift potential. Worn nozzles can change distribution patterns and cause under or over application, potentially impacting your bottom line. Now's a great time to replace your worn nozzles. Save 10% on John Deere spray nozzles, only available at your local John Deere dealer. Offer ends February 28, 2019. See your participating dealer for details.
Channel Seedsman Adam Piggott from Cleghorn, Iowa, and I have been visiting about the maturity stage of the Channel Field Checkup Series. Last time, Adam explained how data and observations collected during the Field Checkup Series and the resulting Channel Custom Crop Report, how it helps farmers. Today, let's hear about some of Adam's personal experiences as a seedsman using the data collected from Climate Field View and the information from the Custom Crop Report. Adam, tell me about a time that the Channel Field Checkup Series really made a difference to one of your farmers?
The Channel Field Checkup Series allows me to analyze a customer's operation and their management style. After a specific instance of a Field Checkup Series visit, I was able to diagnose sidewall compaction for a customer. I was able to document and communicate my findings using Climate Field View and a custom crop report. The ability to utilize the Field Checkup Series allows myself and the customer to make adjustments for the betterment of their operation. The Field Checkup Series observations are almost always received with appreciation, as the customer always wants to know what improvements they can make or management decisions that will make them more efficient in the future.
That's what this is all about, right? Forming some kind of a partnership where you're trying to work towards the success that everybody wants.
The ability to utilize the Field Checkup Series in doing that shows that grower that I am committed to being out in the field and to understanding what's going on within his operation, and that my observations and my suggestions are only there to help him moving forward.
That's what it's all about. Okay, learn more about Channel products and the Field Checkup Series at channel.com. And you can find Channel on Twitter and Facebook. Just search Channel Seed.
The new True Choice offer, buy Pioneer brand seed, earn Corteva cash.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody, and happy Thanksgiving one more time. Okay, we're to that part of the show, right, where it's time to reflect back on what we're thankful for. Maybe get ready for that person at the dinner table to come up with the idea that everybody should say something nice about the person sitting to their right or on their left or both. Oh, yeah. I've heard that one now. It's no longer good enough to just announce what you're thankful for. You've got to actually say something nice about somebody sitting at the table with you. Yeah. When I think back to what's happened in 2018, my first year as host of AgriTalk, I'm thankful for all the newsmakers out there. I don't think I started a single day this year wondering what in the heck are we going to talk about today. I know what that means for decision makers out there. I get it. You're always chasing a moving target and adjusting for windage and elevation, and it's a constant mathematical circus that is happening in your brain. The uncertainty does not make your life any easier. But it sure gave us a lot to talk about this year. And it made John Phipps a little crazy. I know that for a fact. And I think John would expect me to chuckle at that too. So I don't feel bad about doing just that.
This has been a year of excitement and surprises for many of us on the farm. While we all expect unusual weather from time to time, record cold, heat, rain, and drought in the same season are certainly noteworthy. This pattern of constant, unanticipated events was certainly in play with our corn crop. Yields, which we can now watch in real time, swung from the unbelievably good to the unexplainably bad in the same pass through the field. Too much water on our heavy ground, perhaps, combined with who knows what other factors, made our yield maps look like abstract art. Opening the news each morning on my computer seemed like the same experience. Unprecedented and unpredicted events and actions by business and government leaders upended my expectations and confounded my careful plans. So when I reflect now on those things in my life that I'm thankful for this year, it boils down to the reliable, predictable, unexciting things that mean so much. In fact, people I used to think of as kind of boring now strike me as solid and easy to be around. It also triggers a memory for me of how much we depend on those predictable things and people in our lives. One year during harvest, I was in line at the elevator late one evening when I got a call not just from my bank, but from my banker's personal phone. In the decades we had worked together through some tricky financial situations, she had never called outside business hours or not used her business phone. Now, that was not a prosperous year that year, and under the stress of the moment, I could only assume the worst. Our solemn promise over those years was no surprises. I kept her informed of my actions and intentions, and she did the same for me. It was boring and profitable. So I could not immediately put my finger on a possible problem, but I was sure it was not good news. It turned out my local bank had been sold, and she just wanted to be sure I heard it from her first. Even thoughtful surprises can be stressful sometimes. So this year, I'm thankful for a reliable combine that did nothing surprising at all during harvest, for an elevator that somehow kept going and got the numbers right, for members who showed up at meetings and voted, for friends and family who supported me predictably and dependably, for viewers who watched and commented faithfully, for all the wonderful time between those many moments of agitation. And the next time I say, "I'm bored," I just hope those around me reply, "You're welcome." 2018, I am thankful for its moments of boredom.
Thankful for moments of boredom. That is classic John Phipps. Thank you so much for that, John. And you know what? John did hit on something that Randy Francis, young farmer in northeastern Iowa, he talked about it on last week's Farmer Forum right here on AgriTalk. John mentioned the reliability of the elevator, even the reliability of a combine to help get this year's harvest done. Randy is a corn soybean farmer up in northeast Iowa, and they feed a bunch of the corn that they grow to hogs. But Randy made a point of giving a shout-out to the employees at elevators and co-ops. He recognized the fact that if everybody up and down the supply chain doesn't do their job and do it right and in a timely fashion, that we wouldn't be able to get a 4.5 billion bushel bean crop, a couple billion bushel wheat crop, and about 15 billion bushels of corn out of the field and to where those bushels need to be for the next guy in the supply chain to put those bushels to use. Everybody's important here. Randy even recognized the fact that it is popular to say, "Thank a farmer." He even said, "Instead of thanking a farmer, I want to thank the guy at the elevator and the guy's wife because he didn't get to be home to tuck the kids into bed that night either during the middle of harvest." I don't see anything wrong with thanking farmers. And when I do, I wish most of you would just say, "You're welcome." But Randy's right. If you're going to thank a farmer, then you better back up a little bit and thank a plant breeder. Thank the guy that's hauling fertilizer and the chemical applicators and the truck driver. You know where I'm going with all that. Like I said, I've got no problem saying thank you to a farmer, but maybe what we should really be doing is saying that I'm thankful for farming. Okay? That catches everybody. I'm thankful for farming. That includes everybody that has anything to do with putting food on the table for themselves and for those that are generations removed from the farm. And I'm thankful to John Phipps for starting that thought process today and to Randy Francis for helping me finish that thought process. It really is a team effort out here. And I am, of course, thankful for you, the people that listen to AgriTalk and the people that challenge me to try to do better and to be better every day. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Be careful with that credit card tomorrow. You know, it's a big day for shopping. Thanks to Clinton and to Tyne and to Andrew and to John for contributing to today's AgriTalk. And a special thanks to Ashley Davenport for putting it together so that we can all spend some time with our families today. Come back this afternoon for AgriTalk After the Bell, and we'll talk again tomorrow morning on AgriTalk.
Sure Start 2, Culex, Durango DMA, Classic.
More than 100 crop protection products.
Enserve. Ever Pre-X.
That's what's available to you through the all-new True Choice offer from Corteva AgriScience, the agriculture division of Dow DuPont.
Approach Prima, Sonic.
It's an offer simpler than saying all these names in 60 seconds.
Trivance, Realm Q.
Just buy Pioneer brand seed and Corteva cash is immediately put into your True Choice account at your crop protection retailer. No waiting, no rebate. Then you can put that Corteva cash towards more than 100 crop protection herbicides, insecticides, fungicides, and stabilizers. And as you can hear, there are a lot of options for you.
Open Sky, Elevore.
With True Choice, the only hard part is figuring out which of these products you want.
Perfect match. Resicor, Instinct.
Ask your local Pioneer sales representative or your crop protection retailer about True Choice. New, simple, now.
Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about upgrading your weed control with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide.